Welcome back, y'all, to another very interesting episode of Lion Ryan, the transformative podcast that is judgment-free. We focus on community, culture, self-development, self-help. You know, not so much gossip, not so much politics, but more of the things that make us feel good. And when I mean us, I mean people in the community, LGBTQIA+, Black and Brown communities, and especially women. On this episode, we have TT the artist in the building. Now, absolutely no. We are not about to just introduce you like, one, you're not my friend. Two, you're not my best friend. Three, like, I don't love you to the world and back. I'm not about to interview you like some random stranger. And like, period. For those of you who don't know, this is a very special episode for me, not because this is my first guest, but because TT the artist, for you people who don't know, I would like to make you familiar. The rapper, artist, director, doesn't really do her any justice, but still the acronym for that is RAD, rapper, artist, and director. She's also an advocate for everything she does. She's an activist for everything she does. And I don't really want to say what she's doing right now, but because if anybody listens to my podcast, you know the questions are about to be silly. So, TT the artist, welcome to Lion Ryan.
Yay! I cannot believe I'm on Lion Ryan. Wow. I've made it. Mama, I made it.
What's up, TT? How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm excellent. Thank you for being on Lion Ryan.
Well, thank you for having me.
Wow, that's such a sexual voice. Wow.
Here she go. Wow. It's still Pride Month, right? Or it's the last day of Pride Month.
Yeah, we're closing out this episode with Pride Month. Like, this is the last Pride Month episode, even though I'm going to have many a gay people on this show. I just would like to close this show out for Pride Month because you are a special guest and you're my first guest. And thank you for even coming.
I'm excited to be here.
Wow, TT. So TT, first question, like really, like what we talk about in this podcast, let's not even be fake here because this is not what we really do. Because you edit every single one of my episodes. For those of you who don't know, she edits all of them.
Yeah.
So how is that listening to all of my banter and canter and terrible things that I say? How is that while you're editing?
Well, you know, it's really intimate for me because it's like your voice is in my ear. I get to know a lot more about you, a lot more about the way you think. It's been fun really seeing the show evolve and grow from, you know, what we started in the kitchen to now Lion Ryan TV and beyond. So, you know, every time I edit, I just try to put a little more extra oomph into the edit, a little more sauce, you know.
I'd say you're doing a damn good job, girl.
Thank you. I'd say you're the real star here.
Wow. Thank you. Coming from someone who has a movie on Netflix and currently is working with Issa Rae and currently is in the works with so many more businesses. But I'm going to shut up and I'm going to let you tell them what you actually do. So, TT, you're really special to me. And I want people to know that, you know, I just want to say that off the top. People are not going to kind of think this episode is like a tit for tat kind of like, let me ask you a question. Then you answered the question. It can't really be that. Basically, because you know my entire life, period.
Yeah.
What's the weirdest thing about knowing me?
You don't like people.
What?
I mean, she's great with people, like, but she really truly is an independent woman and an island of her own. Like, she could literally thrive and be happy on an island of her own. So when she does step out of that zone, that comfort zone, you know, I just always see you excel. You know, I never see you not do well when you do step out of that comfort zone.
Why are you so sweet?
I mean, I'm just being me. But, you know, I think to people sometimes, like when you say you like to be alone, it could be a little weird to people. But there are a lot of people who probably relate to you in that experience as well. So it's not really so weird, but I'm saying that when you do step out of that comfort zone, you know, you're out of here. All the time, every time you do.
So you think that my comfort zone is being alone?
I think one of your comfort zones is being alone, but another one is eating food. You like to eat food. Lots and lots of good food. Like, don't ever take her to a 3, 2, 4 star. She needs 5 stars, at least 4.5 star meals, or else she's very underimpressed.
Wow. See, this is not the answers that I expected. Like, I did not expect any of this. First of all, I feel like my comfort zone has definitely been pushed. I've pushed myself and taken all of the risks when it came to what I'm comfortable with, I'd like to say, because if it were up to me, I wouldn't be in entertainment whatsoever. This is just the only thing that I'm good at.
So, you think so? The only thing? Nah, you're good at a lot of things.
I mean, I'm good at what drawing and painting and stuff, but at the end of the day, like, I would still be doing major art shows and selling NFTs.
I think you're really good at organization.
So you think I should be a professional organizer?
Well, I think you can apply those things to your creative, which you do. But I think that that's something you really are good at. Wait. Organizing, because I know when I'm doing stuff, you always kind of help hold my hand when, you know, I'm all over the place, like, ah, you know.
So basically, I need to, okay, boom. Guys, this episode is not going where I thought it was going to go, and I never thought to even make a script to have TT on the show. Number one, we're going to talk about all of TT's accolades and her accomplishments and who she is and what she stands for and represents. But I ain't think this episode was going to start this way. This is why this is Lion Ryan, y'all. What? So I should be someone's professional organizer and paint shit?
You should be my professional organizer.
Absolutely not. Okay. So TT, what do you feel is the most, what do you feel most proud of right now? Go.
Oh, what do I feel most proud of? Wow, that's a great question. I think I feel most proud of the impact that some of my work makes in other people's lives. I think I'll truly sleep well at night, knowing that a lot of the things that I'm doing is really helping people. I think I'm very proud of that. You know, I think I wear that like a badge of honor. And when I don't feel like I'm of service, and this could be a Virgo thing, because I know at Virgos, we like feel this need to be of service, of use, even in our relationships, whether it's friendships, partners. We have this thing where we feel like we need to be of service. So I guess, you know, one of the things that I do feel most proud about is seeing how the impact of some of the things that I do, whether it's my films, whether it's my music, helps people.
I love that for you. I had to hit you with that. That's the industry term. Love that for you. No, seriously. Okay, one more time. What do you specifically, in grave detail, feel most proud of right now? Go.
Oh, so something more detailed. Let's see. Okay, well, I just shot my first new short film.
Woo!
That's something that I've never done before in terms of going from directing unscripted film to screenwriting. So accomplishing something that I didn't even think that I could do. I'm definitely proud of that. And now I'm like, well, what else can I do? You know, so I did a short, Ebony 8, which you star in.
Wow.
And now we're, you know, of course, going to make it a feature film. But I'm just thinking about, wow, I was able to do that. Something I never thought I could do. And I'm proud of myself for not giving up and giving myself a chance to see it through.
I'm proud of you.
Thank you.
Can I say what I'm proud of mostly for what you have going on right now?
Oh, yeah. I'm all ears.
I would say that I am proud of you being the ultimate mentor without even putting the title on yourself. That's number one. You're a mentor for more people than you know. That's solidly a fact. Number two, the fact that you highlight a movie on Netflix based around Black people when it wasn't cool. after all the things, the terrible things that have happened to Black people after the pandemic, it seems like Netflix, Hulu, all these things, which we love, all these platforms have highlighted Black culture based on our struggle and our grief and basically our oppression. You made that movie, what, 15 years ago?
No, it took about 15 years to make it, from ideation, meaning like from the time I thought of it, I was a senior in college, 2006. I was at art school, so I went to school for art. And I was in Baltimore, I was 18, and I just was like, man, I found the Baltimore club culture, and I was like, this feels very familiar because I grew up in Florida originally, and I was a big, big, big fan of like 90s dance music, Uncle Luke, 2 Live Crew. And when I heard Baltimore club music, those sounds felt very nostalgic and very connected to where I come from. And so for me, I started doing club music around 2009 with one of my collaborators named Mighty Mark. And at the time, he was known as Murder Mark, but we did some rebranding and we named him Mighty Mark because we always saw this journey as something that would go worldwide and global. So we wanted to be able to market it to the kids and everything. And so from there, I tried to apply to a few funding programs and things like that that could help me get it off the ground because I didn't have a budget at all and I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't go to film school. I didn't know anything about how to make a film. I just knew I wanted to make one. Mm-hmm. So it was a passion project. And then I would say around 2017 is when things kind of kicked off after all the failures. Like, I mean, we got robbed, our gear got stolen. We did Kickstarters, raised the money, had to use the money to pay for gear that was stolen. Hard drives blew out. I think I started over maybe like 2 or 3 times from scratch. And so it was at a point where I just didn't think it would ever get done. And then it was like 2017, some grants opened up in Baltimore and I self-funded the film. Right around to the time where we got it to the final phase, and that's where I met Issa Rae. Shout out to Issa Rae, Denise Davis, Prentice Penny. Like, you know, it really takes a village to get a film out there, and they came in and they helped me to get the film finished and helped me get it to the people that were higher up that led us to Netflix.
Right. So that's why I had to interject that very, very humble answer. Because you have so much more to be proud about. And every time I see you and every time I hear you speak and I listen to you and every time you help people without even knowing you're helping, honestly, because it's in your nature, I'm proud to even be next to you.
Well, thank you. That's beautiful.
Yeah, and that was just one very, very humble story of TT's. That was just one very humble story. So it's Pride Month, and you know, basically, obviously, not obviously, niggas is gay. Okay,
so ooh, we about to get to it, honey.
I mean, it is what it is. You know what I mean? Like, we're closing out Pride Month, and I really, really wish I had just more queer people up here. But what does being? I'm not assuming you're queer, but you basically know a lot about the culture. Mm-hmm. What does being Black and queer mean to you?
Well, I do identify as queer. I also am a advocate for LGBTQIA+. And I think what it means is just to be unapologetically yourself. And it took me a long time to even feel comfortable to say who I am, you know, just because I came from a very religious upbringing. You know, of course, LGBT is not really something that's socially acceptable when you come from these very religious backgrounds, a lot of us who are Black and queer. So for me, it was liberation. It means liberation. It means being at one with yourself and being whole. And that's what I felt when I finally got to a place in life where I decided that I wouldn't move based on what everybody wanted me to move based on. Like, I would want to move to my own beat. You know what I'm saying? I want to create my own world around me. And anybody that want to be a part of that world can be. Anybody that don't like it don't have to participate. And that's just kind of how I live my life.
I think that's amazing because today I saw the producer of was it Pose? No, it wasn't Pose. It was the producer of, what's the other show? Where they basically...
Legendary?
No, it was a show where they basically had a really nice gay scene. Like it was man on man.
Oh, P-Valley.
P-Valley. Yeah, he was P-Valley. Lubing it up. He was lubing it up. It was two trades. You know
is
what I'm saying?
Is this season two? Because I really got to get into it. I haven't had a chance yet.
This is what happened today. Okay. So if you didn't see the last episode of P-Valley, the two guys were basically, they were tops. But, you know, when you're trade, you get to be top and bottom. You know what I mean? So it is what it is. You know, versatility is everything when it comes to us. So he was lubing up real quick and getting ready to get his ramshacking on. You know what I mean? Like he was really, TT, I hope this doesn't make you uncomfortable.
Oh, I'm cool. I'm with all the shits, okay?
Oh,
wow. You can get real ratchet real quick.
Wow. I think a story time's coming up. But so the last episode, one of the producers from P-Valley was talking to Lil Duval. And Lil Duval was like, hey, y'all, you need to be warning us when you about to have a gay scene on a gay show. Can someone explain this to me? Like, when does it become, why are you watching it? Number one, Lil Duval, why are you watching the show? You know P-Valley is obviously a gay show. It's a gay show, no?
Yeah, P-Valley's been gay since season one. So if you watched the whole season one and you watching season two, then...
And it ain't the first episode of season two.
Then you definitely sus because... You over here trying to act like you just watching it for the strippers.
Thank you.
But it's a whole lot of other things going on.
It's a lot of dicks.
For the strippers. And kudos to the creators of P-Valley. It's lit. I had a chance to have my music in season one. So I feel like I'm already a part of the culture. But we need shows like P-Valley, to be honest.
I told you. She's going to try to keep it humble this entire episode. But we're going to get out every single thing she's
saying. I ain't doing nothing but sipping my wine.
Listen, while we're sitting here, she's currently having her music synced in like four of your favorite black shows right now. And this is why. This is exactly why. This is my first guest. And this is why I love her dearly. Lil Duval chose to be like, yo, he chose to tweet this, which is so fucking stupid, right? Y'all need to make sure that y'all give us an extra warning before some gay shit happens on the screen. Well, my nigga, I don't know. Considering the show has been this way for the whole first season, you're watching the second season. The producer decided to not even clap back. See, this is not a clap back to me. This is common fucking sense to me. He said, firstly, who are you? I don't know who you are. What are your accolades? What have you done? Number two, I am the producer of P-Valley, and I'm also the writer of this particular episode. P-Valley is filled with dicks. If you don't like dicks, you don't have to watch them. That is my favorite part of his read. It wasn't a clapback to me. That's not what I call a clapback. That's a fucking read. First of all, I don't even see you. Secondly, I wrote the fucking show. Thirdly, I'm a producer on this show. And as much as I see pussy everywhere, y'all need to get used to seeing dicks. And every time you see one, you don't need to tweet how it's gay.
Because I definitely don't see no straight women complaining.
Period.
And if they are, then all you gotta do is turn it off.
Right.
All you gotta do is turn it off. All you gotta do is turn it off.
Turn the channel, bro.
Y'all better get ready for this musical.
Turn the channel. Oh, yeah. Also, every time TT and I are around one another, we make some sort of hip-hop musical.
Yeah.
It turns into, like, it's really freaking crazy. It's crazy. So, yeah, I just don't understand what the point of that was and why cis straight men choose to do shit like that. Like, bro, nobody is forcing you or holding a gun in your head to watch gay TV, bro. Like, no one's doing that. None of us did that. So when you tweet or put a post on Instagram on your story and be like, nah, this is some gay shit, bro. Did you read the log line of P-Valley? Did you see who the main characters are? Shit gets weird, bro.
I think people, the internet personalities, they take it too far. It's like, you all, when's the last time you wrote a whole series? Matter of fact, when's the last time you wrote a whole series that has, you know, that got renewed to have a second series? Like, I think we're so hard on people, and this is his creativity. This is whoever wrote and produced or directs or do whatever, anybody involved in P-Valley, this is their art, this is their creativity. And respectfully, if you don't like it, turn it off. Right. That's it.
Turn it off. You know, my biggest thing, like, with hetero, cishet men literally getting upset about just the gay community, period. And it mainly feels like only gay men. Like, they don't get mad about gay women. Like, if two bitches is making out and bumping coochies and shit, they'd be happy. You know what I mean? Like, they get so happy when two women are making out. But then when there's, like, men involved, they get so defensive and mean and crazy. And it's just like, what? Whatever a man does in the bedroom has nothing to do with you. So I get so confused. Like, did he whip his dick out and slap it on your forehead? Did he take it out and do something to you with his schlong? Is his balls hanging by your balls? Are you sword fighting? You're not. Why do you care what other gay men do? This is a serious question of mine. I don't even care. Look, the answers don't matter to me. You know what I mean? The answers really never mattered to me, because when I see people get so upset over just homosexuality, period, queer, gender fluidity, non-gender conforming, non-binary people, I don't understand how you are so upset when you literally get to wake up and just live the same exact life you've been living, bro.
That's a fact.
Right? You get so mad over transgender people, but you don't understand that you can ignore whatever you don't want to see and just go live your life.
Yeah, like, I wonder what really makes people so uncomfortable about someone else's personal lifestyle.
Because you might want to experiment, hoochie daddy. You hoochie daddies might want to experiment real quick with, you know, one of the girls.
That part.
So you get mad when you see it too much. Saucy Santana's ass is jiggling too much. You can't interpret. You can't figure it out.
I can't figure it out because I wish my ass shaped like that, to be honest. Saucy, I'm calling you. I need some twerk lessons ASAP, honey. Okay? The way you was giving it up at the BET Awards, honey, coming out with your coordinated looks and dances, and you should have been on the main stage. Like, it's all types of weird stuff happening, and LGBT artists don't always get granted access.
Right.
And we should be respected as true, brilliant minds.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So you're definitely an LGBTQ plus artist.
Mm-hmm. I would say so. Like, I always looked at myself as, like, I'm somewhere in the spectrum of that world, you know? And I was never, like, putting labels and titles on myself, but I just feel like that's my community, you know? Being a woman is my community. Being a Black woman is my community. And being Black in America is my community. So I stand for my people, my LGBTQ plus IA people. And we in media have to do better at increasing the representation, because it's not just fair for all the people that, you know, can benefit from our ideas as non-conforming queer creatives that just, like, have all these innovative ideas. We're able to shapeshift and make all these things happen for people that make them look great. But a lot of times I feel like, and I don't know if you agree with this, sometimes with LGBT artists, we just don't always get the same respect or access into, you know, mainstream media.
Well, you know, the shade about that whole statement right now that you just tried to throw at me. See, the whole shade about that statement is some people, as yourself, may say, you ain't gay enough. You don't say you're gay enough. You don't identify enough. You don't even make believe that you have a cap because you are Black, brown skin, a woman, and queer. Right. So that was the whole shade around your statement. But it's OK. I caught that and it's fine. It's true. It is what it is. I feel so many ways, especially in the entertainment business and media. But you also reminded me earlier in this episode how I am almost like an introvert when this is an extroverted business, but I found my groove. And I think that everyone has their special way, you know?
Absolutely. I think that it sucks that even just being able to proudly say what you are, you can end up in a box or a category. And I don't think that's fair, you know, which is why a lot of us choose not to lead with that. You know, I could say even I've been in business for like 10 plus years now, and I'm just now getting to the comfort level where I know my work speaks for itself. So it can be in many rooms. But I think now more than important part of life right now is just staying true to who you are and your voice. So in certain rooms, if it comes down to saying that I am an LGBTQ plus advocate, artist, or whatever, to get the message across, the story across, to bring more voices in and celebrate them, I'm going to stand on that. If I'm in a room where I got to talk about being a Black woman and the challenges that we face in this industry, I'm going to stand on that. So I just think that we got to move from always feeling like we're stuck in a box, or people making us feel like we're in a box, I think, like, and just lead with what we feel is our overall narrative. And I feel like my narrative has always been about women empowerment, advocating for LGBTQ plus IA representation, you know, all those things that I feel are close to me because that's what I identify as.
That's beautiful. Just like your face.
Well, I did exfoliate.
Yeah, see the blush action. See the blush action. Wow. I mean, you're blushing. It's quite cute. It's adorable. Yeah. Oh, look at you.
You're a crazy girl.
Oh, wow.
You're crazy.
You're a crazy girl. I bet I'm crazy.
Where's your drink, honey? I'm out drinking over here.
You don't need to outdrink me, hon. I know what you're drinking.
Cheers.
That's Kool-Aid compared to what's in this cup.
Ooh, okay. Honey.
So, okay, so that sounded like where you're from. Background, Florida. After Florida, Baltimore.
Yep, Baltimore City.
Okay, explain this.
So I was 18 and I wanted to be an artist, and I went to art school. I got accepted to the Maryland Institute College of Art, where I studied graphic design, teaching. I wanted to do everything because I just looked at colleges as like one big social experiment. So it's kind of like some people go to school and they kind of know everything. Like, shout out to my friend Jacoby Satterwhite, who's like this super art star. Ever since I've known Jacoby, when he came to school in college, he always knew he was going to be this like big art world person, and his work was always that from the time he got there till now. Now he's like in all these big museums in New York, and he's got books and he's lit. And so for me, it was a little different. I was just this like all over the place artist. Like, I wanted to do graphic design, I wanted to do photography, I wanted to do video. And you know, at the time, video was just becoming a thing. You know, we weren't even working with DSLR cameras, you know, and this was like 2006 when I graduated. But all that to say is what college kind of gave me was a lot of skills. It was just like a lot of skills, taught me how to just be in different social environments and connect with people. At an early age, I didn't know what networking was. And when I look back, college was one big network. And so some of those people I still have maintained friendships with, and it's cool. But that's kind of like where my journey as an artist really, really started, was when I got to Baltimore and I started going to the clubs. I was hustling. I was working like 6-7 jobs just to like pay my tuition and, you know, add that up with the scholarships and like, you know, Sally Mae and all that. I was actually a go-go dancer. And not, I wasn't a stripper. I heard your other episodes. I never was a stripper. But
you edit the episodes. You definitely heard I was a stripper.
Yeah, but I was a go-go dancer, and I work at this club called Club One. This is one of my many side hustles. I was interning. I actually interned at MTV, too. Mm. I did a lot, man. I always was a person that did a lot and wanted to do a lot. So I learned so much, and then that's when I started going to this nightclub, Paradox in Baltimore, which a lot of people from Baltimore didn't know. The Paradox is where, you know, the dance scene was, the Baltimore club music culture was. And that was when things really started to open up for me, and I really found myself as an artist in Baltimore City. I will say that I give Baltimore all the credit to being a place where I could grow as an artist because, you know, the cost of living was affordable. I went from living in New York for 2 years after I graduated college to living in Baltimore, and I was able to, you know, make a life for myself. Friends became family, and Baltimore became my home.
Yeah, and that's how you made Dark City Beneath the Beat on Netflix. So we talked about it so early on in the episode. We never said the name.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my film is called Dark City Beneath the Beat. It's definitely popular, critically acclaimed, and award-winning now. But beyond the accolades, this film is a true love letter to the creative community of Baltimore, my peers. And what's so interesting about it is that as an artist, I just felt that this was something that was needed to be seen because we didn't really have a full representation or spectrum of what Baltimore City was to the world, except like violence, drugs, trauma. And I just felt like that wasn't my experience. And so I was like, my experience was art and, you know, meeting other artists and creating art in the city. And I just wanted to show that. And so it felt like one big marketing piece for the artists coming out of Baltimore. We worked with over 150 plus artists. Being an independent artist is so crazy making a film because you're working with very, very limited funds. And I'll add that I self-funded, you know, I self-funded this project. And it was just so crazy because, you know, applying for grants, trying to figure out how to connect each step of the way. I remember editing. I had an ex-girlfriend, and I'm sure we all had ex-girlfriends, but I had an ex-girlfriend, and literally I was in her bedroom, and I had a table, a really small fold-up table. I didn't have a real editing chair, never edited in an editing suite. Literally had this fold-up chair with pillows behind my back because I was like trying to get the film edited and done, working off like 3 hard drives. It was pretty crazy. Mm-hmm. I actually have a picture of that shit in my phone somewhere.
I gotta see that.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. And, you know, all of that was a quiet time for me. These are the things that people don't see. You know, they don't see when something you're going through or when you're working on something. They only see the finished product. So people always have their opinions, which goes back to the P-Valley conversation. Like, no one knows what's happening in that artist writer's room or, you know, understand everything they had to go through just to get a show like this on mainstream television that's now Emmy nominated, I believe.
Yeah.
So we have to just keep going. Honestly, the critics are going to be the critics. And that's all I got to say about that.
So you believe that the further along you get in this industry, there are going to be people who just don't understand, and no matter what, they're going to criticize you. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I'm saying that the people that are so focused on what you're doing can't be doing much because, you know.
Ding, 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 dong. Ding, dong. Not to cut you off. That is incredible. Say that again and you can elaborate on that.
Yeah, I would say the people that are focused on you or down-talking you or telling you everything you need to do can't be doing much because they're so focused on what you're doing. And, you know, I'm out here making
a million moves, I'll say it.
A million moves, but more importantly, I think it's important that we leave an imprint of our own history and take ownership of it, because otherwise it's going to be left to the others. And we all know what that means. And if we don't write our own narratives, if we don't tell our own stories, then who will? And so, you know, heavy is the head that wears the crown. A lot of times you're going to be talked about. People are going to make up things about you. And, you know, you can't really give it too much energy, you know, especially in the public space, because everything that you say in the public space becomes like a receipt. It becomes like
a domino effect.
Yeah, it becomes an imprint. So it's like when you think about adversity, when you think about adversity, you know, you have to sometimes take a step back and be like, what is the impression that I want to leave that's going to make me feel good? Sometimes you do got to get people together. And then sometimes some people are so weak inside emotionally that they that you adding to that is only gonna make them worse.
Absolutely.
Right? And so does it make you feel good to add more to someone who's already not together? And in my mind, it's like, nah, I'ma let them live. Like, you know, I want everybody to live. We got so much more bigger things in this world that is happening right now that my movie, as great as it is, I'm already working on the next movie and the next movie and the next movie. This was just one big move that I did by myself and with the help of other creatives who were willing to lend their time and talent to be showcased and for their voices to be amplified. But there's so much more work to do. There's so much more work to do.
There's work to do every single day, every single second. I think the work-life balance is what people like you and I need to work on, right? Yeah. Because, like I said, you're an advocate, you're an activist, you're a mentor, you're a teacher, and then you're actually a doer, in my opinion.
I love to do.
You're an...
Are we going to have, like, a nasty Q&A?
What?
Because it's the end of Pride Month. We got to give them something juicy. I'm just saying.
I don't got to give nobody motherfucking nothing juicy. Okay.
Wait, because, well, you know, I gotta tell them a nasty story because, you know, in your episodes, you always kind of tell a story.
Yeah, I tell my story.
What's
time
my story
of
time? I got to tell a story time. It could be quick. I could tell it.
Okay. So we are done talking about TT's great accomplishments and everything she's done for the Black community in order for her to
Black power.
In order for her to talk about nasty shit.
Sex.
Let's hear it.
Well, I don't know. What's the topic?
Okay. So, my nastiest moment as coming out as a teenage queer. Mm. I had a woman suck the strap. What's yours?
Oh girl, I was not ready for that.
Well, you said if you want to compare stories.
So you telling me you got BDE?
What?
BDE.
Big dick energy.
Yeah.
Whatever you want to call it. I mean, in high school, I literally purchased my first strap-on, and
oh wow,
you know, the girls that I was dating at that time wanted to put it in their mouth.
Oh, man.
So, you know, and respectfully, they were very, like, they were like, you ain't about to use the same dick on me that you used on her. And I was like, okay, girl, we'll take the dick home. I'm going to get another one. But they would bring it and they just wanted to suck it. That was what they did. So there's my queer pride month.
I don't know if I could top that, honey.
So let's hear yours now.
Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I can top that, Lion Ryan. You are clearly way, way psyched. Let me play. Let me stop playing with y'all. Okay, well, the nastiest moment. Let's see. I think the craziest shit probably would be, I wouldn't say craziest. All right, I'll tell you about my high school. My high school experience was crazy because, like I said, you know, I was just getting out of the church whole cult thing.
No, you didn't even touch on that, actually.
Oh, I didn't. All right.
But did you need an episode part two?
Well, we might. This might be part two when we talk about some other shit.
Oh,
but.
My God. But can but you just give them a brief of that first?
Yeah, you know, I like I mentioned before, I grew up very, very religious, and it was like a cult-like environment. So for like most of my life, I came from like a family where I experienced abuse, domestic abuse. And then, you know, growing up in the church, it was abuse there. And so it was like just all types of trauma here, trauma there, everywhere. And so when my mom finally left that environment, I was free. Like, I couldn't even wear pants, like, for a long, like, I was not allowed to wear pants. I wasn't allowed to wear shorts, nothing. They called it don't dress like in men's attire or whatever. And this is like, what, 1998, when finally we started to transition out of that lifestyle.
Terrifying.
Which I'm still spiritual. I still love the Lord and I still believe in God. But I'm just saying that was something that I really transitioned out of, like that restriction. So I felt like I had missed majority of my life. Anything from age 14 and before, anything from 14 and after was like, this is when I actually started living.
Got it.
So I'm like 14 or 13, my first year, I'm able to like wear pants and just all types of things and like do things that the other kids were doing socially. And so I had this group of friends and they were like my best friends. We all were in the band and we used to go over to her older cousin's house after school. And her older cousin was like our friend. She used to like, we were like teenagers, but her older cousin was probably like in her early 20s. And so they would just let us chill at their spot. And then they would bring boys over. And the first time I ever got, what's a good way to say this?
I don't know. You have to tell me.
Got my pussy ate.
At what age?
Well, I was, well, by then I was like 14 or 15.
I guess that's.
I was still a virgin. I don't even remember who it was, to be honest with you. It was one of the guys.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I don't remember his name.
That's fine.
But that was crazy because I was literally in the project.
My thing, I don't
my mother, if she hears this, listen. You know, I'm grown now, so sorry.
Well, mother, we love you, but you have to hear things like this regardless. Honestly, and I'm so happy about you talking about your pussy eating experience in the projects, or maybe getting your pussy eaten. You didn't eat the pussy. But, you know, that's a big thing for me is like the parents knowing and talking to us more. Not anymore. I'm a grown ass woman. I'm sorry. Like, it's too late for anyone to talk to me right now besides my therapist. So I would like to just put out a PSA. Please talk to your kids, yo. When they feel uncomfortable and look uncomfortable, just ask them questions. Ask them more questions. Ask them things that you wish you would been asked.
Yes, yes.
Because, I mean, the amount of fuckery that I put myself through, I mean, is totally, totally uncanny. This shit is unacceptable. And it's probably, I mean, my therapist told me why I don't want to have kids, and it has nothing to do with this, and I think she's wrong. But I know I don't want to have kids because of the things that I've been through. And I don't want my kids to go through anything that I've ever gone through. Like not even one thing. My life just started getting good a couple years ago.
Yeah, and I would say, like, if you talk to your kids, it could save them from sucking 10 dicks to maybe one.
You sound like
or
me.
None.
You sound like me. It's kind of scary.
I'm just saying, like, my parents didn't talk to me at all about sex until I had one pregnancy scare. I had one pregnancy scare because I almost lost my virginity in the art supply closet with one of the starting five of the basketball team in my high school. And that was my first introduction to the male anatomy. In real time. Like,
so you ain't seen no dicks before that?
Not like that, where it was the physical of the girl and the, like, me and this person.
Right, you only seen dicks.
I had
on
only
TV.
Maybe touched one, and it was school.
Oh, got it. Okay.
But I wasn't doing the freaky stuff in middle school at all. Like, you know what kids do in middle school? Like,
I mean,
they might rub on a few butts.
I don't know.
I'm just sharing my experience, but I'm saying my parents didn't talk to me about sex, so I was left to the streets.
Right.
We was left to the streets, man.
I think my parents didn't speak to me enough about sex. My mom gave me this one fake ass conversation about herpes, and I was like, okay, girl. Well, now what? I didn't know what that was.
Right.
She taped a picture of herpes inside of my composition notebook and was like, don't do sex because you won't get that. And I'm like, well, that doesn't even make sense, mom, because I don't even know what this is. I ripped it out, threw it out. But if I had the conversation, if I were to have children now, literally as they can talk, it would first start around what to do if someone touches you in your areas.
Yeah.
That's number important. One, right? Mm-hmm. Then after that, I would, you know, they become teenagers. When boys tell you, no, I'm safe, I'm not dirty, you won't catch anything. Listen, the first time I ever had raw sex with a dude was when I was a virgin and I didn't even know what raw sex was. Mm. I lost my virginity at like 14 or 15 years old to an older dude. And he just kept saying, don't worry, I'm clean. Don't worry, I'm clean. Don't worry, I'm clean. Y'all, that was rape. Yeah. Period.
Yeah.
And I didn't know. So then I'm going along. This nigga cheated on me, got me pregnant. He cheated on me, no lie, like probably 13 times. That's another episode.
Whole nother episode.
Yeah, that's a whole nother episode of story time, y'all. And trust me, I've been through enough therapy. And also, I love myself so much that I'd have no PTSD from this, which I'm really happy about. And I have no trauma from it, mainly because I don't even deal with niggas like that. But
that's great.
I'm good. But I did my work. I could have ended up really like a psychotic person. I could have literally ended up beating bitches up, hiding behind bushes, trying to find out if my nigga is cheating or not. I could have been on my third kid right now. Mm. And it's because I've done the work and I've chosen the higher path, which is never, ever, 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 ever going through anything like this again. I'm so proud of myself.
Mm. I love that for you.
I love that for you as well. I'm really happy you're not doing things in the art closet anymore.
No more art closets. I'm out the closet. Hey!
Wow, we're queer. We're here. And we're here to stay. TT the Artist, you are really, really, really something else. You're phenomenal. I really love that you chose this platform, this episode, Lion Ryan, to talk a little bit more about your personal stuff as opposed to all professional stuff. Mm-hmm. I listen to every one of your interviews. I'm not a stalker or anything, but I listen to a lot of your interviews and it is solely based around your music.
Yeah, this is actually kind of cool to just like let my hair down and open up a little bit.
Yeah, I even heard you say a curse word.
I did. Because I think, you know, and just I know we're wrapping up, but I was thinking that just hearing everything we've gone through, even like listening to your podcast, even hearing myself talk about my stories, and we're still here and still smiling and our skin is clear and we're taking care of ourselves, drinking water, minding our business. Like,
you're drinking tequila.
Well, tequila and rosé, because we are celebrating the last day of Pride month. But just seeing all that, and still being here and still being able to appreciate the good things in life really, really is a true testimony. And so if there's people out there that I feel are trying to get out of that or have gone through those things, what would you say are some things that we can leave them with, you know?
My number one thing that I always, always, always say to people is life is uncomfortable and it's meant to be that way. And if you can push back the uncomfortable parts, the parts that make you sad or angry or anxious or depressed, you've mastered it. Like you found your life hack. My life hack was realizing that I didn't have to put myself through anything I didn't want to be put through, period. I know that it is subjective if you have kids, if you have a certain job, if you have a certain way of life. I found my way to make life most convenient for me. And everyone has that way. Everyone can continue to find that way. And all it is literally stop caring about what people think and or say about you.
I love that.
I know I sound like a Gen Z person, yo. I know I sound Gen Z right now. I know it, but I'm not even trying. You know how Lena Waithe recently said stop code switching? And she's able to say stop code switching after she was an apprentice, an intern, after she had to code switch for so many white people for so long because she had to make her way in the door. And now she got movies and shows and she's Lena Waithe. But she said stop code switching for white people. But the thing is, that's her way. She found her way. I found my way. I no longer care about anything that any of y'all have to say about me. And if it's good, thank you. That's it. All the other things, if it's not critique that I can grow from, and I get to choose that, honestly. Because you don't cut my checks, right? So if it's a critique that I can grow from, if you're somebody that you can give me business advice, financial advice, home ownership advice, credit advice, I mean, being a black queer woman advice. If you cannot do those things for me, I don't give a fuck what you're talking about.
Period.
I don't care. I don't care. And I'd like to leave you with that. I love y'all. I love everyone who's listening. I love everyone who's supporting. And I love everyone who does actually feel as if they can grow in their maximum way, right? As opposed to growing silently. Be loud. Take up space. You are worthy. You are valuable. You are limitless. You are powerful. You are everything. This is Lion Ryan with my special guest, TT the Artist. Where can they follow you, TT?
Y'all can follow me at TT the Artist. And listen, we out here, we moving. I got the label, Club Queen Records, Woman Focused Record Label. We turned 4 years old this year.
Woo!
Self-funded and independent. And we really just trying to make way, man. We trying to do better for the new generation. And like Ryan said, man, we moving. We not caring what people say about us anymore. That's a great message for me. Period.
Period. You did that, girl. I'm so proud of you.
Oh,
love you.
I love you too, girl.
Girl. Okay. This is another episode of Lion Ryan, the limitless episode that does not judge. And literally, we do and say exactly what we want. Y'all were thinking it. I just say it.